Hi, Bloodstream listeners. Host Patrick here with another Bloodstream Mini, this time featuring Luke Pembroke, a blood brother from the UK, who earlier this month announced via social media video that he had just received his dose of gene therapy, as he is currently participating in one of the Hemophilia B gene therapy clinical trials. Given his willingness to talk about this extraordinary experience, one that many of us are curious about, and being an unapologetic podcast producer, I asked Luke if he'd join me for a remote interview. He agreed, and after briefly chatting through some of the boundaries, this is obviously a sensitive subject matter, but before too much was shared, we turned on the mics and just started talking. And I kind of haven't stopped thinking about this conversation since, and I kind of want to share more about that, but I also don't want to step on Luke's incredibly vulnerable and powerful story, so I'll come back to that point I was going to make at the end of the pod for those interested in sticking around. Dr. Jonathan Roberts is a hematologist who also has severe hemophilia, and he's also Amy Board's guest this month on Ask the Expert. Part one just came out on Monday. It's a great 30 minutes covering joint health, gene therapy, clinical trials, VWD frustrations. He's a researcher there, self-advocacy, pediatric to adult care. That transition is always tricky. Hemophilia Treatment Center and the value of the comprehensive care model, and so much more. And in part two, the Get to Know the Expert part, which is coming out tomorrow, Thursday the 27th, you will get to know more about Jonathan Roberts, the individual. So head on over to bloodstreammedia.com and subscribe to Ask the Expert for that listen. Actor, comedian, and disabilities advocate Nick Novicki, my favorite 3'10" actor who has ever tried to cozy up to Anthony Soprano Jr., is my previous latest interview guest here on Bloodstream, the one just before Luke. So if you missed it, go back one episode on Bloodstream and you will get some hilarious and touching conversation on health, entertainment, and representation. Finally, I'm recording this introduction from Washington Days, NHF's National Advocacy Day here in the nation's capital. I'll also be recording for the pod throughout Washington Days, hopefully giving you all just a taste of what the experience here is all about. So keep an ear out for that in the near future. And if you're listening to this in real time and have something you'd like to know about Washington Days, let me know. PJ Lynch on Twitter, Patrick James Lynch on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Shout out to the committed LinkedIn users out there. Or email mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com, and I'll see what I can do. And lastly, I want to thank our presenting sponsor, Takeda, without whom we would not be able to make the Bloodstream podcast possible. Thanks, Takeda, and visit bleedingdisorders.com to learn more. And with that, I hope you enjoy this conversation with Luke Pembroke about his extraordinary experience receiving gene therapy. Joining me now for this Bloodstream interview, a very special one, is my friend from across the pond, Luke Pembroke. Hello, Luke.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for having me on. Long-time listener now, it feels like. And I'm finally jumping in on the Bloodstream podcast. What a momentous occasion.
Right. I was going to say, certainly anticipated you'd be on here sooner or later. Didn't anticipate the why. So let's just get right into it. You have hemophilia B. I have hemophilia A. There are currently gene therapy clinical trials for both hemophilia A and B. And you shared with the world, actually on my mom's birthday, on February 11th,
oh, really?
That you are currently enrolled for one of the trials for hemophilia B. So tell us a little bit about that.
So it's been a very intense couple of weeks. I've enrolled onto a phase 1/2, they're calling it, clinical trial for hemophilia B.
And what does that mean, 1/2?
So my understanding is that, you know, when it comes to clinical trials, phase 1, the priority and primary goal is to assess safety. And then when you start looking at the phase 2 side of things, it's to start looking a bit more closely at efficacy as well. And as far as I'm aware, in regards to the trial that I'm enrolled on, there have been a few people who've been enrolled on it before me now, and different cohorts, and we're in a sort of dose finding stage of the clinical trial. So I guess I'm part of the group where they're now trying to find what the sweet spot is, if you like. That remains to be seen. For now, it's still early days, and I'm part of a small number of guys enrolled on this. But
February 11th was the day you got your dose itself.
Yeah, D-Day. It was a long build up to it, though. That's one thing I will say. I sort of decided that I wasn't going to drop the news publicly that I'd be going on to a gene therapy clinical trial, purely because there are no guarantees in the run-up to it. You know, you have to go through these screening procedures and alongside the technical elements to making sure you're biologically eligible. I think you have to take a long look at what you've got going on in your life as well, and really make a sensible decision as to if it's something you can commit to. The protocol does require a lot of hospital visits, you know, not just in to the lead up, but once you've actually been dosed, it's fairly intense for quite a while. So it's no, you know, it's no small task, and it isn't just as simple as heading to the hospital, getting dosed and then having a few blood tests. This very much is, in a way, kind of long haul. And I've heard some people at the treatment centre I'm being dosed and taken care of at, that they almost feel like they adopt the trial participants. So, yeah, kind of, It's already starting to feel like a second home after nearly 2 weeks.
So I want to get into more of what is to come, but let's start going backwards first. When did you first start considering whether or not to enroll in a gene therapy clinical trial?
Yeah, really important question. So it was actually about a year and a half, 2 years ago. I'd always sort of monitored what was going on in the gene therapy realm. And when I was at my hemophilia center that I've been treated at since I was diagnosed, more or less, my consultant at the time did bring up the clinical trial that was going on and, you know, just kind of put it on my radar and gave me something to think about. And there was a point where I went through the screening procedure because I was just curious, you know, if you've got those neutralizing antibodies that might mean you're not eligible for the certain types of the trials. You know, that's kind of your end point. So just as a starting point, I wanted to know, okay, am I actually eligible to take part in the trial? And then it came back that I was, and things were moving forwards a little bit slowly. And then I just looked at what I had on for the whole of 2019 and work changes, living changes, just so many different circumstances coming into play. And I just realized that I couldn't commit to the trial at that point. It wouldn't have been fair on myself, and it wouldn't have been fair on the people, you know, that put all the work into making these trials happen. And I knew that I would struggle to keep up with the follow-up visits, realistically speaking. But as it got towards the end of the year, I revisited the idea of enrolling on a gene therapy trial, following so many discussions with, you know, people I know in the community that are pretty close to me. You know, I discussed it at work because that was going to be hugely important to make sure that I could carry on producing the work that I do. And then conversations with my friends and my family about what it could mean for me, and what the potential risks are, all of that fun stuff. And it really was a long process. It feels like a million years ago now when I was having those conversations early on. And then it suddenly just started speeding up, and all of a sudden in January I was given a dosing day, and I put it in my diary, and yeah, it happened, 11th of February. That was the day it went ahead.
You mentioned all the people who are involved in your decision to enroll. Who in that group or what group of people maybe were the most instrumental voices, both for supportive reasons and those maybe, were there any that were particularly important as challenging voices to you?
Yeah, I mean, I always try and explain gene therapy as simply as possible. You know, it's, I have the benefit of coming from a biology degree background, which got me in crippling amounts of debt, but it was something I found interesting, and it sort of equipped me with the basic scientific knowledge to understand what gene therapy means. But when it comes to
plus, we're going to put it into play right now as well. So let's earn that degree. What is the Luke Pembroke definition of gene therapy? And you know, I should mention as well, Luke, I'm assuming most people listening are going to have a working knowledge of hemophilia,
but there may
be some people who are listening because of the interest in gene therapy more so than hemophilia. So in the context of this explanation, not to overload you here, if you wouldn't mind doing a little hemophilia 101 as well.
So you've put me on the spot now, Patrick, really putting my degree to the test. Look, this is not the sound of me quickly opening Wikipedia, guys, don't worry. So, I'll start off with the whole Haemophilia 101, and I will explain it how I explain it to my quote-unquote normal friends, the sort of spiel I give at parties that inevitably bores people. So I always describe haemophilia as a deficiency of a clotting protein in my blood. That means I am more likely to experience prolonged excessive bleeding, and people usually respond, okay, so paper cuts, and, you know, if you get cut, it will never stop bleeding. And then I get into the whole, well, more often than not, it's related to internal bleeding. So bleeds into joint spaces, bleeds into muscles, which both can lead to long-term damage and challenges. And I then move on to how that's treated. So I tell them that as someone with severe haemophilia, I produce less than 1% of the clotting protein. That's really important. In normal people, that helps their blood clot. And because I don't have that, I currently rely on replacement therapy, which involves mixing a white powder into a saline solution and injecting it into my veins, at which point people are like, oh my God, no way, how can you do that? And then the whole explanation of, well, I've been doing it since I was 7 years old myself, so it's something I've just got used to. And I say to them that as long as I take this replacement therapy, I can lead pretty much a normal life. But haemophilia has meant that I've had to limit myself in some ways growing up, whether that's sitting out from contact sports or having to be off my feet when I am experiencing a joint bleed in my ankle, for example. And usually by that point, if people haven't fallen asleep, they seem to have a pretty good idea of what haemophilia is. And they understand that it isn't really about your platelets not working, which is one I get so often from people. They hear haemophilia and they go, oh, that's where your platelets don't work. And I go, well, actually, no. But there is another thing. There is another bleeding disorder that involves platelets. But, you know, I have to pick my battles. But I guess moving on to how I would describe gene therapy to people, and how I have been, for that matter, describing gene therapy to people who understand what I currently do to treat. I tell them that they take a viral vector, and that involves removing the viral DNA inside the protein shell that it's usually contained in, and then some clever people in a lab somewhere insert a functioning copy of the factor 9 gene, which is the gene that I am deficient in. And once they load that into the viral shell, they inject it into me via an IV infusion, and it is then transported through my bloodstream and eventually reaches my liver, which is where factor 9 would normally be produced. And the viral shell inserts the genetic payload into the liver cell. And once it's inside the cell, it travels to the nucleus. And I usually hope that people know what a nucleus is from at least biology school level. And once it's there, it enters the nucleus and begins coding for the factor 9 protein. And therefore, my liver cells will start, hopefully, producing a beneficial level of factor 9, which means my blood should clot. And obviously, when it comes down to the it's early days, it's still in early clinical trials, all the variables come into it. So it's kind of drip feeding people pieces of information and building them up to understanding what it could mean for me. And then the conversations around risks come in. When I've been speaking to my friends and my family, so my brother, for example, it's not just been a single conversation. You know, it's almost like I feel like I'm teaching them this mini crash course of intensive short lectures on things about haemophilia. And then hopefully they sort of have a better understanding of what it is that I've signed up to. That sounded like a really long-winded explanation now.
That was great. No, that was really... No, I appreciate the level of thoroughness and understandability.
You did mention, risks, and I'm curious to know, what did you understand as the risks coming into the trial?
So, paying attention to what's been going on in the community, I understood that, you know, amongst the number of risks that people had highlighted, the potential risks and some of the unknowns. So, now that I think about it, it makes me think, wow, are there really that many? Because I went through a pretty thorough consenting process as part of the trial I enrolled on as well, which meant that I really got to ask questions about those potential risks, and I had them explained to me multiple times. I guess the first thing that I wanted to understand that stood out as a priority to me was the potential risk of cancer that people are starting to hear more about. Mm-hmm. And that all comes down to what would happen if part of the trans gene that they insert into you integrated into your own genome and caused a, you know, shift in the sequence that then turned on an oncogene, a cancer causing gene, or turned off a gene that programs your cells to eventually die.
And Luke, please correct me if I'm incorrect here, but as I understand it to date, the thinking has been that because the adeno-associated virus, the AAV vector, does not, you used the word, integrate, we don't have that risk for cancer that previous clinical trials for gene therapies using different viruses saw happen. The thinking to date has been that that process does not take place, and that the risk of cancer resulting following that integration is null and void if there is no integration. Was that your understanding as well?
Yeah. So the move towards the adeno associated virus was one that is quite positive, because you know there was a lot of evidence out there to show that it was a favorable viral shell to use as the delivery mechanism, and from the evidence that's out there and in the literature, there was nothing to suggest that it posed an increased risk. But again, it all comes back down to like unknowns, and there's just so much we don't know yet because people haven't been on this therapy for a lifetime. I mean, the more pressing matters and risks that concerned me was if I have a particularly high immune response to the gene therapy, then it could jeopardize achieving a good level of expression. And obviously, once you've been dosed with an AAV gene therapy, you will have developed antibodies regardless. And so you can't be redosed. You know, it's kind of like a one-shot deal.
Right.
And so if you don't end up with a positive result, you know, that's kind of, you know, you're back at the drawing board, and you will have to wait for much further down the line for another vector to be designed that you don't have immunity to. And then following on from that, the trial that I'm on involves taking prophylactic steroids at a certain point, and that is to get out ahead of any potential liver inflammation and immune response to try and conserve the factor levels that I may be achieving. And those drugs come with, you know, I'm not on them for life. I'm not going to be on them forever. It will be a short, intensive course. But they come with their own side effects that can sort of, you know, some of the side effects that have been explained to me are, you know, you'll develop big appetite, you're likely to put on weight, it will affect your sleeping pattern, you might feel super hyperactive, and it'll affect your mood. So I might become more easily irritated, or it might make me feel more depressed. So that was actually the main thing that stood out to me, thinking about how these medications that I might be going on further down into the trial would affect my my well-being, as it were. And so it's something that I've had to mentally prepare for, and still sort of am in the process of doing that.
Do you have a relationship with the other guys? And I'm assuming it's all adult men, but I could be wrong. Other guys on the trial?
No. So I am, obviously it's probably a good thing that I don't know any of them by name. I haven't, you know, come across anyone that I know of on this trial, but, you know, it's such a small community, relatively speaking, that, you know, it could have been within the last year or so that I did bump into one of these guys who's been on the trial, and they just haven't been as outward spoken and vocal about it as I've decided to be, which is totally fine. It's their right. And I think, you know, more often than not, it's probably more sensible to keep quiet about some of these things because it is an intensive trial to take part in, and you know the priority needs to be taking care of yourself. My decision to talk about it publicly was something that I thought long and hard about, and I'm comfortable in the way that I'm doing it, and I know what my boundaries are, and I know ultimately that if it gets to a certain point where I need to go dark on it all, then I'm happy to do that because, you know, at the end of the day, I have to prioritize my own well-being above everything else. But I think there's a lot of mystery surrounding what these gene therapy trials actually mean. And I wanted to, in some way, show people what the reality of it was because we're so used to just seeing data published or press releases coming out. But we don't actually get as much of an insight into what it means for the individual. And as people start thinking about gene therapy more regularly, I wanted to sort of throw in my two cents and share my subjective experience and opinions on it all, just to get people talking and thinking a bit more about it.
I know it's only been 10 days since the 11th. We're recording this on the 21st. But can you tell us when the results you've had thus far from blood work and your factor production, can you share with us, not looking for a number, but emotionally, psychologically, what did it mean to you when you started getting information back about your gene therapy dose and its impact on your body?
Yeah, it was this week that I got the sort of first significant results, and I shared on Twitter that I was told the figures, and it meant that my factor 9 level had entered the normal range. And obviously that's quite a range, but, you know, technically speaking, it meant that I wouldn't be classed as a haemophiliac, I guess, as per the official definitions out there. And I honestly, Patrick, I was not prepared for and start jumping the gun, as it were. So my mobile number had changed, and one of my nurses on the trial sent the result to my old phone, and I didn't receive it. So when I came in for a blood test earlier this week, they said, "Oh, so did you see the result?" And I was like, "No." And then they told me, and I just, my first reaction was, "You're kidding, really?" And they were like, "Yeah." I was like, "You're joking." It was like, you know, disbelief. And despite all of the preparation I had from all of the people working on the trial on what to expect, it still hit me like a brick wall. And then...
Well, I want to know what the guy who got your results thought when he read, "Your blood work is consistent with someone who does not have hemophilia." I want to know who the person with your old phone number...
What
was their first thought?
Yeah, exactly. I wonder who's got that number and has just gone, "This means very little to me, but it's clearly some important news."
Now, we are in clinical trials, so what are your expectations in terms of the durability of your factor levels over time? What are your expectations?
So, having looked at some of the trials that have happened in the past, and you know the very early ones that have been conducted in hemophilia B, whilst they were using the normal factor 9 gene and achieved levels in the moderate to mild range of haemophilia, you know, it's coming up to, I think, the 10-year anniversary since those people were dosed now. And they've all supposedly remained pretty consistent. You know, they all got up to levels of around 5%, you know, some a little bit lower. I think some maybe were at sort of 6%, but they've remained pretty much there. Which is really promising. And I hope that, you know, from that research, the things that were learned have been implemented in the trial that I'm taking part in. But when it comes to my expectations of, you know, longevity, I really, and I've said this to a few people now, I'm just taking it day by day. You know, I'll celebrate the small wins, but I'm going to remain realistic and realize that it is still very early days. Like you said, it's only been just over a week since I received the dose. And I don't want to start, you know, getting ahead of myself, you know, not just for my benefit, but for sort of the expectations of people out there in the community. And yeah, just one day at a time and just focusing on getting through this intensive period of the clinical trial, which is pretty much going to dominate my life for the next 4 to 6 months. So
yeah, give us a little, give us a peek into that. So what does that look like on a week-to-week basis?
Exhausting. So the dosing week, I was, you know, in for day minus one to have blood work done on the Monday. I was then staying overnight near the hospital and got dosed on the Tuesday. And I had to stay in hospital overnight because they continuously take your vitals at regular intervals and continue taking bloods throughout the rest of that week. So then I was traveling to and from the hospital in London, about an hour and a half journey every day, Monday through to Friday. And then this week I've been in Monday, Wednesday and today, and I will be in 3 times a week for the next 6 weeks at a minimum. And that's provided that, you know, nothing crops up in the blood work that might mean I need to come in for an extra visit. And those visits, as the time goes on, will become less frequent. But, you know, for the next sort of 6 to 8 weeks, it will be intense. And I'm pretty much commuting into London multiple times a week to get myself bled and hand in all my samples that I have to give. And then trying to juggle that with my full-time job as well. So it's, you know, it's no easy task. It really is something that, you know, if anyone is even considering looking into these trials, you really do need to be aware of just what level of commitment it requires. And it is so important for you to actually go to every single one of those appointments and not miss any of them, because they are, you know, hugely important, especially during the early stages of the trial.
Look, we're coming up on our time. I just want to ask one more question. When we think about the future of this community and the future of treatment, there are two independent questions, but they're also kind of interrelated. And as there shifts to one, there's concern about its impact on the other. What do you see as, and of course, we're just two individuals, right, with perspectives. This is just our opinion. But from your seat, what do you see as the future of hemophilia treatment and the future of our community?
It's a big question. I mean, I remember I took part in a youth debate at the EHC Congress, and I was actually given the side of gene therapy to argue against the novel therapies and factor concentrates. And whilst we were assigned sides that we had to defend, all of us on the panel at the end held the same opinion that our community needs choices and it needs options. We know now that the narrative is really going in that direction, that no two patients are the same, and everyone's an individual, and personalizing treatment and giving people options is going to be hugely important. Hemophilia, you know, gene therapy in hemophilia is not going to be for everyone. Whether that's a case of eligibility or something that the individual doesn't want to pursue. And I think it's important that we keep all options open and don't end up moving purely in one direction. And I think that the other thing I want to add to that is we have seen so much happening in the last 5 years of hemophilia treatment, you know, gene therapy and everything else. And I did not expect to see such a significant amount of change in such a small amount of time. It really has sort of taken over every crevice of the internet, it feels like. You know, there's always something new being shared every day, and there's always new results, and it's, you know, it's a whirlwind of stuff to keep track of. And I think we get really excited about all of these innovations, and you know, I consider myself lucky to even be able to take part in this sort of trial. And I've had people say really nice things about, you know, it's so good of you to sign yourself up to that. But, you know, I'm happy with the decision I've made. I've made it for a number of reasons, which I, you know, I plan to get into further down the line. But we can't forget that there's still 75% of people out there around the world don't get access to adequate treatment, if any at all. And whilst all of these developments are going on, I think it's very easy for us to forget about the bigger picture. And we need to recognise that there are guys and girls out there with not good enough access to treatment. And we talk about all of these developments going on. And at times it feels to me, Patrick, that the gap is getting bigger. And that worries me. I don't want the gap to continue getting bigger. We need people around the rest of the world to be getting access to the treatments that are available now, before we can start celebrating all of the innovations that are going on that a few fortunate people such as myself are able to get involved in. And that's just, yeah, something I wanted to add towards the end there, because it's all very exciting, but we can't forget about the bigger picture.
Amen to that. Well, Luke, tell people where they can find you online and follow along with your journey.
Yeah, shameless plug time. So I'm mostly posting on Twitter because that seems to be the favoured platform for the haemophilia community at the moment. So I'm LJ Pembroke on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram as well, being a bit of a clown. Just search Luke Pembroke and you should see me. And I also have a YouTube channel, which I'm nowhere near as consistent with, but I've been recording a lot of clips from my gene therapy journey so far. And further down the line, I plan to edit that all together and make it into a bit more of a substantial video to share on my YouTube channel. So if you just search Luke Pembroke on YouTube, I should pop up somewhere as well. And yeah, say hi. I always love hearing from people in the community and chatting about exciting things. And I'll be at WFH this year as well. So if anyone's listening and they're going to be there, then look out for me if you know what I look like.
And if you don't, you can find him on social media.
Exactly.
Give yourself a clue. If you're going to go find him at a meeting, you ought to at least know what he looks like.
I'm not going to be walking around with a massive, you know, I had gene therapy sign above my head.
I'm glad you ruled that out.
I didn't think that would be convenient for me.
That was a really good idea. I think it's so important that you are as open as you are. This is, as you said early on in the podcast, a topic that has a ton of the community's interest. In a way, it sort of sucks all the air out of everything else. It's the number one topic. And to have someone like you who can speak to the experience so well, who does have a biology background, who is living with hemophilia, who is social media and media friendly, I think it's really important. I'm glad to hear that you're so cognizant of protecting yourself and setting your boundaries, that you have a plan in mind for what you're doing with this, and that you don't mind hitting the escape hatch if at any point you feel you need to, and don't forget that. Thank you, though, for coming on here. I'm glad that you're talking about all this, and please know that Bloodstream is open to you at any time to share interesting moments from your journey.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I really appreciate it. I know that a lot of this has felt like I've just been rambling, but it's been an intense 2 weeks, to say the least. And it felt like this was quite a nice opportunity at this time point to fill people in on the pod. And I'd love to come in and speak again in the future and perhaps just have a bit more of a casual chat where I don't try and convince people that I did in fact do a biology degree that I am very, very rapidly forgetting. it's awesome to be on and I really appreciate you giving me the platform to speak about it, because I haven't really had the opportunity to get into the nitty-gritty with it all. So this has been good.
mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com for anybody who has questions for the next time we have Luke on. mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com. Luke, have a good rest of your Friday night.
Awesome, you too.
Thanks again, Luke, for your willingness to come on and share so openly your experience of this exceptional moment in time. I mentioned in the beginning a few, it's kind of been sticking with me, this conversation. And I think for a few reasons. One, Luke's the first person I know who is on a gene therapy clinical trial who's also younger than me. So that's kind of interesting to think about that with regard to my own health and my own life. And it kind of makes me wonder, well, am I suffering more than I should be? When Luke talks about his ankle pain, my ankles are my targets as well. I think to myself, is this in my future? And I think a lot of people are in my position wondering, is this going to be my future?
And there are people like Luke who are signed up for the investigational part of this. And as he described, and he's obviously a smart guy, biology major, he does his risks assessment, he talks to people in his life, and this is the right choice for him. And I kind of feel like now Luke's teaching me now and will over time if maybe this is the right choice for me. Now, in full disclosure, I have hemophilia A, he has hemophilia B. It's not the same thing. It's not the same treatments. But I think you get the broader point. I'm talking about the experience, the existential reality that we with hemophilia are experiencing through this incredible moment in time. And to think it was only 6 decades ago that Americans with hemophilia were lucky if they saw past age 20, that's true. And that's still the fact for most of the world. But that's a conversation for another day. So thanks again, Luke. Thanks again for listening, everybody. We have a special Bloodstream Mini coming out on Feb 29, Rare Disease Day, Feb 29 this year, with the creators of Rare Revolution Magazine. You're not going to want to miss that. So subscribe to the Bloodstream Podcast. Don't forget about Ask the Expert. Bloodstream Journeys has some great stories for you. And you can find them all at bloodstreammedia.com. Thanks a lot for listening. As always, my name is Patrick James Lynch. And until next time, take self-care of yourself.